Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Kane gets dog.
Shut up, Tom.
Dog runs fast.
Run, dog, run.
Come on to the Rock Show. Come on to the People Show. Come on to the premiere show, SmackDown.
It is the year of our Lord, 1999, the 23rd of December. The second week in a row, Westlife's god-awful cover of I Have a Dream is number one in the charts.
You know it's true.
Shut up, being at the gallery. The fourth week of The World Is Not Enough, not the best Bond film, but still better than I Have a Dream cover.
Oh.
And Harvest Moon 64, unsurprising, hits the Nintendo 64. So everyone for Tester, right, for Santa to get. But somewhere in the world, somewhere in America, there was a little old wrestling show, still known as WWF, before they, of course, voluntarily changed their name to WWE for no real reason in 2002. There was a little going on called SmackDown.
Mm.
What happened on the show? Is it still blue and white? Does the theme song have lyrics yet? That's right. The answer to all these questions and many, many more can only be answered on this here very podcast to listen to right now, the Cultaholic SmackDown Classic Review. And you're listening to the dulcet tones of myself, Matthew Gregg, and the guy who makes them look good every single week, Mr. Tom Campbell.
You carry me this week. You are the, as we did this on the Cultaholic Classic Raw review, you are the Brett to my Bulldog this week, because I'm effed. As you may have heard on the news video this morning and on the podcast, the news podcast this morning, I'm fine. I'm not ill and I'm not dying, not yet. But as a result of having the flu and being off a couple of days, what always happens with me is that as soon as the flu has passed my system, my body then goes, congratulations, here is your reward, a cough that simply will not go away, that will cause you to hack your lungs up for an entire evening and consequently shatter your voice box.
Right. That's your go-home sequence.
Basically, it is my go-home. Normally, when this happens, and it's difficult to explain to the good lady who was in bed last night, like basically hearing me basically try and pass my lung through my throat. I said, I promise you, I'm better. You don't sound it. No, but this means I'm better. It's annoying. But apart from that, all is well in the world. Matthew Gregg, how are you?
I'm fine, Tom. I couldn't think of a better day and time to be using our brand new equipment here at Cultaholic.
Oh, this is... Right. If you're a technical-minded so-and-so, it is a Rodecaster Pro. Beautiful, genuinely. I came back off, I had Friday off ill, and then I came back into the office on Monday morning to see the instructions for a Rodecaster Pro spread out on my desk. I was like, oh my God, it's like my birthday all over again.
It was Nimbus 2000.
Oh!
Laying on Harry's bed.
Amazing reference. This is basically the Tom Campbell equivalent of a Nimbus 2000. Yeah. I'm like, we're still figuring it out to the point where it's still some of the factory settings are on it, which includes, like, hilarious sound effects.
Oh, good one, Tom. Call that the test button, shall we?
Good joke. So what we're going to do today is... I mean, this...
Wow, that laugh just keeps on going and going, doesn't it?
Like the podcast. So this is really good. This is really good for our confidence, really. So when we do our test gags,
yes,
just make us feel a little bit better. We go like, Steph, why am I rubbish at Harvest Moon 64?
Like having Twitter right in front of us.
We'll be right.
Oh, wait, that's what phones are for. I love this already.
We'll be right back. Right. So, right, we can't play with that all day because it's beautifully self-indulgent.
Well, unlike the rest of this podcast.
Oh, God, Tom.
Well, that's the brand new setting on the Rode Nimbus, is the fact that makes it sound like you nearly drop your microphone. Yeah, there we go. Luckily, the snare drum was right here to catch it. So, that's the news in the office in 2020. Bless you. What is the news 1999?
So, before we get into the rigors of SmackDown on this particular day in the year of our Lord, we'd like to pick up a copy of the Wrestling Observer newsletter brought to us by the erstwhile Sir David Meltzer, who may or may not have had a few opinions on wrestling in this particular year, and wrote them all down, which is one to do. He's been doing it for about 400 years. So we've got the Wrestling Observer newsletter open from this particular time period. And this was actually quite an interesting week in professional wrestling in 1999. A very pivotal moment occurred in the career of Bret Hart the Sunday before this show. What do you think it was, Matthew?
If I remember correctly, the timeline is you had the match on Nitro where he took a bunch of power bombs. And then it's the match on Thunder where Terry Funk hit him with a Singapore cane about a dozen times.
But what happened before all of that? What was
Oh, Starrcade! Goldberg kicked him in his head.
That's correct. So we've just removed from Starrcade from WCW, which sees Bret get hoofed by Goldberg with a kick to the head, that begins a series of events that basically brings Bret Hart's in-ring career to an end. Did he get a concussion immediately off the kick, or was it a case of he wasn't in the best of shape after the kick, but then, as you said just a second ago, the aforementioned power bombs and bin shots to the head didn't help?
And from what I can remember from Bret's book, which I don't have it with me, I should have it on me at all times, I know, like a Pokedex, but it seemed to be that he got kicked so effing hard that he got something from it. He believes that because his head was ringing and everything else like that, and that the doctors at WCW didn't really know what to do. All right, yeah, you're a bit banged up, but yeah, well, you know, shake it off, whatever. Which, in fairness, I'm not defending WCW doctors, but a lot of people like that. We've learned a lot about concussions and CT over the years. But, of course, he did this, had those things I just said, and then, God, my head's still ringing. Let me go see this doctor. And then the proper doctor was like, whoa, Nelly. Not only are you multiply concussed, not only are you not going to wrestle, I'm not going to let you get in a plane.
Yes, that was, I remember reading that bit about the fact that he wouldn't even be allowed to fly. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, this was a real bad time. And it was the beginning of the end for Bret Hart in ring from this particular point. But besides power bombs and trash can shots, Bret Hart was involved in a very pivotal angle in WCW the night after Starrcade. What was it, Matthew?
Oh, the night of Starrcade.
No, the night after Starrcade.
Oh, well, Starrcade at the end of the 2000 got together.
He did indeed.
Because they did the screw job and they cut the band, and then it was like, yay, this is definitely not the thing this company needs right now.
Vince Russo claimed he had the ideas to bring WCW back to prominence. Who'd have thought one of those ideas would be a retread of the New World Order, the NWO Black and Silver?
Along with a retread of the Montreal Screwjob.
Of course. He is nothing but full of good ideas at this particular point. He's getting a lot of grief backstage. We talked about this on the last podcast. Vince Russo, the bloom is very much off the rose with Russo and Ferrara by this point, which is amazing because they've barely been there a quarter. And everybody's gone, I don't think these guys are all there who are cracks up to be. Hmm. If I said to you, Matthew, ECW Japan.
That was a... Matthew slowly thinks, realizing his reputation as a puro fiend is on the line. Oh, no, that's not the sound effect I thought you were going to play, I guess. It was an FMW thing. There you go, I'll just try and be simple.
It was indeed.
Yay!
Kota Fuyaki came back to the US, and held a press conference on the 16th of December, a couple of days before this episode of SmackDown, saying that he had reached a working agreement with Paul Heyman that would result in forming ECW Japan. Not a fully-fledged promotion, like he may have led people to believe, but possibly like an NWO-style faction of ECW lads in the Land of the Rising Sun.
Yeah, because Masato Tanaka was a member of it, but I think it was just called the ECW faction, maybe.
He was very vague. He wouldn't really mount to much. The following day, FMW held a press conference and went, nah, he's lying.
What?
They said that they'd already had a talent exchange agreement with ECW. And the idea of another one was erroneous.
Oh, right. I actually know more about this. They'd had that dealings. Basically, was Masato Tanaka was the key guy because they loved him in ECW around this period. Tanaka stopped wrestling there for a bit. Him and Awesome were there in 98, had the thing of Heat Wave, and then wrestled for a bit longer and then went. The reason being, Tanaka wasn't being put in very nice hotels. And they were
Makes sense.
Yeah. They were like, but it was like ones with cockroaches and stuff in them. So Tanaka was like going, I was like, I'm not getting treated very well here. And they went, how dare you not do this? All right. And I believe there was a list of like all the times ECW said, all right, we'll do talent exchanges. And then they just reneged on what they were going to do with FMW. And I think this may be the time they went, no, we're done. Tanaka's coming back with us. You're not having him anymore. Be shortly after. Oh, no, that
he's
can't be
coming
right.
home with us. He's staying with us.
No, I just realized the timeline. No, he's in ECW for a bit longer, but it's come to the point where they're going, everything you've said you're going to do, nothing's happened. They advertised Chris Candido and Tommy Lynn Sitch, and they just didn't show up. You know, they said they promised them, I forget who it was. It was a big name, ECW dude. He wasn't there. So they sent them one man gang.
Wow.
It was amazing how ECW had any opportunity just messed them over. It took FMW ages to realize, hang on, we're getting screwed every time we do these. So it's,
so maybe we shouldn't do them anymore.
Yeah.
Gosh, more of that still to come down the road.
And Kurofuki did, of course, said that it was a working relationship, meaning not a paid one. Mm. Next up, Tom.
That is, well, that's all the bits of news from the...
Lovely.
Although, just two little items from the injury report for the WWF. You may notice from this episode of SmackDown, two particular people aren't wrestling. Mm-hmm. One of them is Matt Hardy, and the other is Triple H. Mm-hmm. Both of which are nursing short-term injuries, because this is the time to get yourself paggered, because there's no one else around. Matt Hardy, on Raw, just gone, the McMahon Helmsley era shenanigans, they did Jeff Hardy and Christian versus Matt Hardy and Edge. During the match, Matt was accidentally bust open and knocked silly when Jeff used a senton on him and their heads collided.
Oh, Christ.
Matt was out of sorts at the end of that match, so he's been taken off of SmackDown this week just as a precaution. Triple H, meanwhile, didn't realise this was the case, had suffered an injury to his knee. And it was looking like it wasn't going to cause massive disruption, but it could potentially slow down some of the events leading up to the Royal Rumble. But we will see. So Triple H, it hasn't competed on Raw or SmackDown this week for that reason.
A knee injury to Triple H?
I know, right? Imagine. That man never hurts his knees.
No. And he would still insist on using knee-based offense for the rest of his career.
Because Triple H. So that's the lay of the land for 1999 at this particular point. Now we go over to you, Matthew. Let's go through SmackDown of this particular night.
Well, thank you for that beautiful feed.
Appreciate it.
So what did Triple H do then if he wasn't wrestling? Well,
the only way to find out is listen to this podcast.
I think they get that by now.
Yeah, I've done
the only way to do that is to go to ecwjapan.com. God. Rob Kono. Ryan Get. They should have kept on doing dueling press conferences. Then they afterwards could have said, no, I am telling the truth.
I'm Spartacus.
Unmasked Mick Foley starts off SmackDown this week. Cold open here. He's giving a speech to the locker room. Quite frankly, he says he thinks this McMahon Helmsley era stinks.
I quite enjoy the subtle, quite frankly.
I'd like picked up on that.
Mick
as well.
Foley has always been a master. We've talked about this before. He's a master of very subtle comedy, and he doesn't get the love he deserves for it. And that, quite frankly, was a little nod to Vince McMahon, which I thought was ace.
It is weird when you watch some comedies that have in front of a live audience, or the live audience reaction things, and there's a bit that's funny, but they're not laughing at it.
Yeah.
Like, you get some League of Gentlemen stuff, and what's some of Bottom as well, there's a line where, I think it's because it follows something else, and the timing's not there, and it's just like, oh, There's nothing. All right, and just carry on like nothing's happened.
That's
weird.
What you're up against. But sometimes a live audience can really bring stuff like that to life. I mean, one of the, yeah. I think we might have talked about it on this podcast, one of the most iconic jokes in Red Dwarf history was actually pretty crap as a joke, but it was the timing.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, isn't it?
Switch it up to Red Alert. Sir, are you absolutely sure? It does mean changing the bulb.
I think that's a great line, but you're right. The delivery and everything.
It's the
else,
delivery. Though. It's the pause, and it's allowing the laughter to happen.
It's like, well, I want to talk to you about something mature between two adults. Yeah, it's nothing that we can't. I mean, you know, there's no reason that we can't be mature about this. Go on, Crichton. I want to talk to you about my penis. And then that's it. That's a face that you just pulled right there.
I want to talk to you about my penis.
Just try not to laugh. Yeah, right. Anyway, we digress.
Comedy is timing.
Diamonds are forever. So is the Nature Boy Ric Flair. Matt Hardy and Test are injured. My God. Yes, Matt Hardy is banged up in the hospital, and Test got his nose broken, confirming those rumors that Test's nose was made of the same material that DDP's ribs were made of all these years. And crowd agrees.
Rubble.
Mick Foley's not happy with this abuse of power. He's also not happy with the topless top rope matches that were just an excuse to see tits. Locker room. Yay!
I love that.
And then Mick's, well, okay, that was kind of good. But we draw the line at seeing the Mean Street Posse seven times in one evening. Locker room. No. And then there in the back, Mick says, at this point, you should hear, guys, you should be mowing our lawns.
I mean, it's back, not wrong.
Oh, interrupt you. At the back. They're there going, oh, come on, guys. Viscera is playing with Pete Gass's ponytail. I've seen Oz. I know what happens next. Mick Foley quotes Twisted Sister. We're not gonna take it. Thankfully, the wrestlers are in that same age gap or being all pick all along.
They kind of get it, yeah.
Because if they do this now, the crowd's gonna get it. But it's weird how some stuff, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but this is 99. The idea of Twisted Sister almost feels like, for the people out there, it was like, wow, was that like 300 years ago? Almost. Mm. But now it seems closer than it was back then because that music's lasted so well and a lot of stuff from 99 hasn't.
Yes.
So, anyway, that was a weird point. That went nowhere. But Mick sings this song. He's getting the crowd behind him. You know, we have the only thing we have to lose are our chains, comrades. Then Stephanie McMahon shows up. Mick Foley declares this a mutiny. Arumph. But Stephanie says it's her company. Well, I mean, it's not really.
She's got McMahon in her name, so.
I mean, that's.
Kind of, sort of.
That's a matter for the courts, I think, Tom.
Yeah.
She's made some mistake these last 2 weeks. She's been listening to Triple H and realized that's a mistake. But tonight, she's going to make it up to them. She books a bunch of feel good matches. Test versus Road Dogg. Mankind versus Big Show in a title match. And with Triple H suspended in a shark cage above the ring, we can pick any five people to watch out, to keep any of DX out. Ooh, hey, Tom, maybe Stephanie McMahon's okay.
Do you reckon? I reckon she's perfectly fine. I reckon that we've misunderstood her the whole time. Like,
if she can change, if I can, whatever. Anyway, there's the intro.
I remember watching this as a younger wrestling fan. And even as a younger wrestling fan going, I don't buy this at all.
Tom.
I know. It's almost like they have done this exact thing over. Do you know what? I reckon if we were to do a pie chart of Triple H's career, I'd say 67% of it would be feigning disgust at pretend storyline. It really would. He's so good at it.
At the top of my head, the Triple H Shawn Michaels, who attacked me in the parking lot thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go back further than that.
The step
who ran over Austin?
Well, it was Rikishi, but Triple H was the mastermind.
Yeah, go back further than that. Triple H, Shawn Michaels having to wrestle each other in 1997.
European title match, that's right, on Raw. The McMahon-Helmsley wedding renounce?
Renewing the vows?
Whatever the hell you say that.
Reavowed.
Reavow, whatever.
Renew a vow.
Does like the, I'm so effing smart. I'm the cerebral assassin. Which means I think well.
But the problem is, if you do it all the time, everybody goes, look, mate, I know where this is going. No, I'm serious. I'm good this time. Look, can you just get on with it and just hit me? Because it would save 2 hours. No, don't know what you're talking. Ah, I hit you. You didn't see it coming. Yeah.
Because I am that damn good. We're in Dallas, Texas. Woohoo. Dallas backwards is salad. We're at the sold out Reunion Arena.
The problem is, because I've got this cough, it's very difficult to laugh. But that
poor Tom.
Stars are bright each day and night, deep in the heart of salad.
That famous TV show from the 80s?
Oh, yes, mate.
Sold out Reunion Arena, which also saw the 2000 pay-per-view. Do we have fully loaded?
It did, didn't it? And yes. You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, because I made a point of that too. One of the sleeper pay-per-views of next year.
Mm.
Fully loaded. Oh, still think about that show quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's great. Thinking of a side note of all the great shows we're going to have to look
at. Yeah, because that was a real, that was one of the, because we talk a lot in this podcast about how WWF are trying to make new stars.
Fully Loaded. They have to.
Because they have to, because everybody's pagged. But Fully Loaded 2000 was an example of a time where they were making stars and it was starting to click and starting to land. You know, you had Triple H, Chris Jericho, you know, that Last Man Standing match. Undertaker, Kurt Angle. You also had...
Benoit, Rock.
The Rock, and it was a good show.
At TNA... Got a push as well. TNA, at that point.
Tess and Albert. That, oh my God, the Rikishi Velvina steel cage match.
Anyway, wait.
It's
going to be great looking forward to this, but I think we'll get the 99. Fully loaded. Well, move away from Tom's throat. To Chris Jericho. Make his triumphant entrance. Big pop there. Tonight, he's going to deck the halls of Hardcore Holly because it's near Christmas. And all these SmackDown graphics have a little Santa hat. Isn't that nice? So, Hardcore Holly comes out. We get the note that he beat Velvinas to get the shot tonight, the IC title, to establish that Velvinas sucks now. No, not that way, not a fluffer. Also, Jerry Lawler wasn't at Raw this week because he was at a film premiere, Man on the Moon, starring Jerry Lawler.
Great film.
Also Jim Carrey, but mostly Jerry Lawler. And I know we'll go off topic a bit. Have you seen the Netflix documentary about the making of Man on the Moon?
What's it called? Andy and Me?
Yes.
It's amazing. I can't quite get my head around it.
I need if you haven't seen this, I could almost hear the people going, yes, Matthew, I'm sending you a tweet to let you know that I have watched this as well, to let you know I have also seen this insanity. Just a heads up, if you, like me and a lot of people, love Jim Carrey, you are going to walk away from this looking at him completely differently.
It's going to certainly change your mind a bit on Carrey.
Right.
Carrey. Jim Carrey.
All right.
Not Kerry.
I never heard anyone call him Kerry before. That's so weird.
It's weird, isn't it? Because it makes you think you're talking about a lady.
Yeah.
But it's going to make you change your mind a little bit on Jim Carrey. I can't quite fathom it. I can't quite get in my head because, like, there's the result of Andy and Me is one of two things, right? Either this is a guy who has this unreal mentality for method acting. Mm. It's either that, or here is a guy who is a complete asshole. Like, that is all it could be. There isn't any shades of grey. It's one or the other. And that's why I can't quite get my head around it.
Yeah.
You know?
Fascinating, though.
Fascinating.
Because if you're like a wrestling fan as well, it is the ultimate, which bit is kayfabe? Which bit is Is it both? Is he playing a guy, pretending to be a guy who's doing this, or is he... No, oh, it's amazing. Anyway.
Is he doubling down on the fix? Oh, just watch Andy and Me. It's something else.
It's all a giant con. What do we want Andy Kaufman in London? You know what Andy Kaufman also liked? He liked wrestling.
He did.
Hardcore Holly gets the best drop kick in all of wrestling. And I've typed out in caps lock, so you know I'm
He's facing Chris
there.
Jericho in...
That's right. That was 10 minutes ago we started the conversation. Chris Jericho in a Continental title match, start of SmackDown. Hardcore Holly follows this with the best flying nothing in wrestling. I've forgotten that. No one jumped off the top rope to hit a horizontal opponent with an axe handle, like Hardcore Holly.
I've only ever seen one person in wrestling amend that. You know, when they come off the top, as you say, with the top rope nothing, where you jump off with a standing axe handle only to eat like the boot of somebody or something like that. It's only one person I've ever seen amend that, and that was IRS in 1994.
What happened?
He jumped off the top with a top rope nothing, and Razor Ramon got his foot up. So IRS moved his head, so his head didn't hit Ramon's boot, landed on his feet, and hit just a standing elbow drop instead. I know.
Wow.
That's the only person I've ever seen counter through a top rope nothing.
I didn't know IRS had that in him. I thought all he did was abdominal stretches.
Abdominal stretches and the write-off.
He turned a flying nothing into abdominal stretch.
And shouted about tax cheats.
Something, something tax.
You damn tax cheats.
Chris Jericho gets the walls of Jericho, but Crash runs in for the DQ. But here comes China to even the odds. And it is obviously an even odd situation because her ego is well over 400 pounds.
It's huge at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is just this is part of the China Jericho storyline, with also Hardcore Holly making a little appearance.
Oh, but this he does become more of a pivotal part of it.
This is building somewhere, so I'm no problems here. Billy Gunn and Road Dogg talking to Triple H, trying to think what they can do with Stephanie McMahon. No time for that, though, because Slam Cam presents the Big Show versus Kane Falls Count Anywhere match from Raw. I remember this match. It was very good.
It was great, wasn't it? One of the Big Show's best title defenses.
Yeah. Didn't get many of them during this period, but this one was a good one.
So the story...
Gave a powerbomb through the announce table, for one.
The story behind this was very Attitude Era story, wasn't it?
Just about to go through of it. Do you want to go?
No, I think
I'll
you should.
Oh, goody. Thank you, Tom. Because Kane lost, the stipulation of the match was Tori has to spend Christmas with X-Pac. That was Slam Cam. Hippity hoppity, women of property. And of course, Sherry Lawler is thrilled with the idea. Because presumably Tori's daughter's going to be there as well. Backstage, Stephanie McMahon wants to help Kane. So Stephanie says, look, Kane, I need you to protect me from DX. They can try and get me tonight. Kane's a bit like, So Stephanie goes, well, she paints a hell of a picture here. How bad it must be for Tori to be home with X-Pac. Now X-Pac is violating her and groping her in her home. This makes Kane see the little comedy steam comes out of him like Tom and Jerry. She says, after the holidays, when Kane and Tori take off their clothes, they're not going to know who's who with all the damage done.
Oh, my.
She didn't say that. I wrote that in.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't remember that bit. That's
Kane silently,
grim.
Kane silently, rage-fillly agrees.
Why is everyone falling for this?
But Kane was maneuvered here. Maneuvered like a game of backgammon into doing Steph's bidden. Because, you know, X-Pac's got Tori in a cage where obviously women are supposed to be kept in the Attitude Era until they're brought out for the Pudding Bowl matches.
Oh,
I think that's what I'm getting from watching this program every week.
That is what we are gathering from Raw at the moment.
But never mind that, Tom. It's only a woman. Here's a man wrestler named Rikishi.
These are not the opinions of Coldaholic or Matthew Gray.
This is sarcasm, by the way.
There is the tongue is planted very firmly in the
Jesus
cheek.
Jesus Christ.
And talking of cheeks.
Hey!
Rikishi's
do the sound effect.
Oh.
No. We'll get that sorted out, Tom. Hey! There you go. SmackDown's pre-edited. I'm like this. Shut up. That's X-Pac and Tori having a nice time in the holidays. Rikishi with a rare singles theme.
Yeah, I forgot he had this particular theme as his music.
Yeah. Also, we get the appearance of Taz.
Oh, yeah, the orange... No, it's a mysterious orange glow.
That's right.
What is it? We don't know. It's definitely not Taz.
Not Taz.
Was there any other rumour and innuendo at this point as to who this was going to be? Or was it pretty much just set in stone?
Oh, yeah.
This is Taz.
I believe Taz said that Russo wanted him to get him in. So it was funny that they actually delayed it because they did a thing at Anarchy Rules 99 a few months ago where it's like, Taz has been sent off by, but then do we have to say, it's not the best time to unveil you with everything changing right now with Russo going and Austin going and Undertaker going. Can you just put you off for a bit? And he's like, oh, sure. So they're all going to go back to ECW and put in a quarter ass of an effort. Because, and why wouldn't you? Oh, yeah, I'll definitely dive through the crowd, lads. I'm going to WF next week. Why would I do that? So, yeah, I had to be him. So it was funny, though, he came in. He's like, hey, where's the guy that wanted me to come here? He's quit. Great.
So he was coming in then with the person that he had in his corner no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks. And that's happened quite a bit in wrestling, hasn't it? Something similar happened with Jake Roberts.
I was going to say Jake Roberts is the...
Jake Roberts, who was off of this big money thing with WCW, and as soon as he got in there, the guy that hired him had left, replaced by somebody that hated him.
Yeah.
So he went, good luck with all this.
The guy he knew was going to be a bad thing was Bill Watts, who was vowed to outlive Jake Roberts just so he can piss on his grave.
And that's your boss.
This has nothing to do with the match, which is Rikishi versus Viscera. And we get clips from 2 weeks ago, from Armageddon. There we go. It's a continuity there for the people listening, because we all love Viscera here on the show. God, I know I do.
I like a good match with two big beefy boys.
That's right.
Just two big men slapping meat. To quote Big E.
That's right. Well, bust out the fatties. We got the quick, fast, fat action from the pair.
Quick, Rikishi. Fast, fat action. The new Viscera action figure with quick, fast, fat action.
That's right. They should have put the thing. Rikishi takes the Jannetty cell early. I don't think Rikishi gets enough plugs for how his ability to do that. The flipping, flying around the... People, hopefully listeners, know what the Jannetty cell is.
The Jannetty cell. Should we explain the Jannetty cell?
Why don't you do a video or a podcast about the history of the Jannetty cell?
The history of the Jannetty cell. So it is when you get turned inside out.
Yeah.
I think a whole generation will probably know it as the Rikishi cell.
Goldust did it semi-frequently for a bit.
If you are a wrestler, or if you are training to be a wrestler, and somebody gives you a clothesline or a lariat, and you do basically a backflip as a result of the impact, you go spinning inside out and upside down, congratulations, you've just completed the Jannetty cell.
I think Cornette talked about the history of it one time. I forget the guy, he said some tag guy in the 80s.
This feels like a wrestling curiosities podcast that should happen. The history of the Jannetty cell.
I'm talking about, he did it, some guy hit some dude and he just did it. Like, it wasn't even deliberate. And he went, whoa. And I probably then tried to like do it again, and it took a while for him to get used to it. So he kept like landing on his head and landing horribly and all this. And it's like, I've got it. And taught everybody else how to do it.
Three people died learning the Jannetty cell.
Who's worth it, Tom? It looks so good. Anyway. Rikishi tries to slam Viscera, but he's too fat. And that's to the tune of You Screwed Brett.
That's what the crowd chanted.
He's too fat. He's too fat. He's too fat. Viscera gets kicked, so he spits, and the Banzai drop ends it. Love these two-minute bump-filled Every Move Matters match that Viscera does really well.
Yeah.
It's good to see why he's kept around. And then Too Cool come out to dance, and every week we say, pop's getting louder. I've even typed in, for some reason, like the Black Eyed Peas, the bump gets louder, the bump gets louder. And yeah, they do the dance, crowd liking it.
So this is something they're now doing on the regular. Rikishi going to leave and then being stopped and encouraged to dance.
Oh, no, come on, guy. And that's what gets your action, like, oh, come on, Rikishi, you know you want to dance.
So, I mean, how long until they become a fully-fledged thing? It's not long at all, is it? Because they're kind of a half thing at the moment. I think literally days.
Yeah.
We're days away.
As soon as the calendar changes, we're there.
We are days. Big beefy boys having a match.
Big beefy bass. I don't want a diet. No. I don't want a salad. No, thanks.
I don't want a Dallas.
You can keep your ketamine. Backstage test with his permanently broken nose. Don't trust Stephanie as Kane stands there with his arms crossed. Cool, thanks, Test.
This is probably the most emotive Test has truly been. Like, now he's back there and he's like, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
And even Steph's like, I don't care. Right. I'm your boss. And he doesn't even hang around. Like, you're facing Road Dog. Okay, fine, bye.
So switches bandages.
Well, there was a little glimmer of old-style Test gooberness. Like, Test, who has been basically emasculated through this entire quarter in the WWF, from the guy that was going to marry the daughter of the owner of the WWF to just another guy, and just ridiculed all the way down. Mm. And backstage, there was Steph, who says, Test, tonight, you'll fight Road Dog. And he looked like he'd won the pig in lottery. Fighting Road. No! I want Triple H, and I want a shot at Big Show for the title. It's the least I deserve. But no, I'm going to high-five everybody at Fighting Road Dog.
Sorry, with the airstrip across his face, it was...
Steph, did you pre-order Harvest Moon?
Why do people say I talk like the teachers from Peanuts?
So, yeah, the plan to have Test hit Austin with the car and then pull the window down and goes, guess you didn't pass the driving test.
Exam.
No, damn it. Let me do it again. Guys. No. Puts in reverse.
All better yet, with his penchant for playing games, runs down Steve Austin, winds down the window, crazy taxi.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, we've got the footage of Austin being run over. We think we can hear something coming out of the car as it goes past. Daytona.
My God, that man hit over Austin. Wind the windows down. Oh my God, who is it? We can barely see. We can just hear the voice coming from the window.
Sega Rally Championship.
What?
That was that.
Anyway, we digress every week to debuts on this episode. The first one is new employee, Jonathan Coachman.
Yeah, first sighting of the coach.
He interviews...
Looking young and fresh-faced.
Right, he interviews The Rock, gets about three words in before finger point, tilt head. Finally, The Rock has... Blah, 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 blah. And there we go. The camera quickly zooms in on The Rock. We never see Coachman again. You just see his hand.
I mean, easy first night at the office for the coach.
Absolutely.
He's been interviewing, like, collegiate football teams for a long time. And now it's just like, yeah, can you just stand next to The Rock and just absorb some of his aura whilst we film him?
That's right. Jonathan Coachman was 6'1 at the start of this interview, and he was 6'2 by the end of it. Anyway, The Rock talks about the great days of the millennium, which is coming up soon. Like Benjamin Franklin discovering electricity with his kite. And The Rock tilting his head and raising his eyebrow. He talks about some of the worst days of millennium, like Al Snow's mum giving birth. He tells Coachman, Merry Christmas, you jabroni, in a sign of things to come.
Coachman has an easy ride in comparison to some of the stuff that The Rock will put him through in years to come.
You're exactly right. Jonathan Coachman, more like Jonathan Megabusman.
Hey, that's a brilliant reference. Not big fan
sick
of that.
Sick of the Massive Express all the way. Road Dog, the bad guy with the good pop, comes to the ring. Michael Cole says, Road Dog was the one responsible for breaking Test's nose. And we get a replay quickly proving this not to be the case. As actually last week...
I was going to say, yeah, like he wasn't.
Test, in fact, threw his pad in frustration at not being able to spin the pad quick enough on Mario Party. And it bounced and hit him in the face. Oh, and then Triple H hit him with the wedding ring and stuff. But it was mostly Road Dogg. Cole tries to get emotionally charged over for Test. Maybe one day we'll figure out what WF got wrong with Test, apart from everything. Road Dogg gets the advantage early, somehow, by punching Test right in his broken nose. Because if you were playing a video game and you had to fight this guy, you'd probably fight there as
you'd
well.
You'd go for the nose. You go for, if this was 2K20, like, well, for one, they'd be glitching through the floor by now.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Test's face would already be red at the start of this match. So you'd just do everything head-based
absolutely.
To wipe him down.
So Test, the worst punch-out character, gets manhandled by Road Dogg until Road Dogg gets bounced off the top rope by Test with a big boot.
Yes!
Bomb.
Massive.
And then Test's sweet diving powerbomb connects. Where he just starts the corner and goes, wee, with him in the powerbomb position.
I love his sit-out gut wrench. I'm turning a corner on Test this week. I'd say that.
This is actually going to positive places for Test, so savor it. Road Dogg no-sells it immediately. So Test takes off the landing strip on his face and uses it as a weapon to nail the pump handle slam and the top rope elbow. Crowd loud and happy for Test just annihilating this guy, as the stipulation was. No DX members are allowed to be there or interfere.
So therefore got a battering.
So the idea is Test has been battered, but let's have him remind everyone, no, he's big and cool. Mm. It's like it's DX with a numbers advantage, which sometimes doesn't work as it should because people really like Road Dogg and Billy Gunn.
They do, but this actually made Test, this did more for Test than the last couple of weeks has.
Yeah, and it gets even better. Test tries to go after Road Dogg with a chair, but the refs stop him. So he just chases after Road Dogg and beats him with his fist instead.
Amazing.
And it's like, wait, he's getting a push now?
This is the Test that we needed going into Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Like, this is so late, but this is the Test that we needed.
That pay-per-view where he had no match.
If we had had this match, the SmackDown before Survivor Series, like a fired up, pissed off Test... Like pulling every massive move out, that spinning sidewalk slam he does, mwah, that big boot that hoys over Dog, that pump handle gut wrench power bomb, that pump handle power slam.
No, I like the idea of that.
Oh, ripping off his face mask and using it as a weapon. The passion and the energy and the fury coming off of Test. If that had been the Test we'd seen, the SmackDown before Survivor Series, and then Test had walked out in that main event, everything would have been fine.
Every week we find another way to rebook Test.
Exactly.
As anybody other than Test.
And they're all better than what they did with him. Every one of them.
We need new stars so desperately. Go back to Pokemon Snap.
Not you, Test.
Yeah. Backstage, Triple H goes to talk to Stephanie And Stephanie McMahon is very good at hamming it up there. He's like, knock, knock, knock. Oh, who could that be? Oh, it's my husband. Pretty good. Kane, the attack dog, with real staring action, as it says in the action figure box, keep Steph safe. You know, Steph admits, the sex with Triple H is great.
Curator for SmackDown, Triple H.
He still has to do what she says. He says, no. So the cops arrive, and by crikey, they actually do something. Remember that?
I don't know what the exact moment was. I vaguely remember when cops didn't just get hoofed.
Right, they've turned into human dominoes at some point in the last few years, but because it was like, well, we're the police, mate. You're nicked, you are. And a special note here, Triple H, with his big jacket, his sharpened hair, and his tan, looks exactly like 2020 Dolph Ziggler.
Ooh.
Or rather, 2020 Ziggler looks exactly like Triple H.
Intriguing.
It's hard to tell. Neither of them's going away. Kurt Angle comes out, so he could have signed the crowd saying, go back to Russia.
Did I miss a meeting? Why is he going back to Russia?
Anyway, we'll get there eventually.
I feel like I missed a meeting.
Kurt Angle very... Oh, wait, no. It's remember, Kurt Angle did play a Russian in Warrior with Tom Hardy.
Did he?
Yeah. He comes out like the Soviet sickle. Obviously, it's like the USSR iconography because that's the cool Russian
bit. Blimey, I don't remember this.
He's a silent dude who's like this ultimate badass who hides patches. Warrior's very good. Anyway, Kurt Angle very honestly tries to explain that this state is dumb. It's hard to argue. But Edge is here. So I wonder what wacky finish we'll get when he loses this week but doesn't. And these are two Funkin' Dojo dudes.
This is a lovely little teaser for times to come.
Absolutely.
Edge and Kurt Angle one-on-one.
These two would grow up together.
They really would. And even now, in the very early stages, the embryonic stages.
Ooh, there you go. Take a shot, lads.
This was still a cracking match. A little treat, this was.
Yeah, and they go together. They'd grow up together, win titles together, lose their necks together. Yeah, they made sure to keep Angle with Funkin' Dojo people, so we get used to wrestling. He picked up very quickly.
Yeah.
And when Angle does a suplex in this match, he jumps up in with a woo, which is in WF No Mercy, so I enjoyed seeing him do it
is
a lot,
indeed.
A lot of times in this match. Eng, oh, sorry, that was me trying to hide a burp, so I said Eng.
Eng, it worked, mate. No one has noticed that you burped.
I don't know why I try and, like, I have to go, oh, sorry, Tom, I've got a burp. I'll just kick around.
Mate, I have failed miserably to hide coughing fits throughout this show.
No,
you get away with
like
a burp.
I actually like it because it'll just be like, oh, Matthew, you're so good this week. You didn't cough once.
Exactly, mate. You are by default the MVP of the podcast right. This week.
Yes.
As per.
Like, Coachman have got an easy job this
easy
week.
Easy money, mate.
Edge lands on his feet. Some people call him Edge. I don't know why. But isn't hurt this week, unlike previous times. Good.
That has been his weird little shtick, hasn't it? That every time he lands on his feet off the top rope, he bangs his leg.
Yeah.
Weird.
Ah. And then
that's it. This time it's fine.
It's all right, though. Get screwed in a completely different way. There's a ref bump, and here comes Steve Blackman.
Oh, my days.
And apparently this thing's still going on. I didn't realize. Steve misses the cane and hits Edge instead. Or maybe he was supposed to hit him. I don't know. Angle slam, 1, 2, 3. And this immediately segues into backstage. Stephanie yelling at Steve Blackman. And Blackman is confused because he's like, but you told me to attack Angle's opponent on Monday. Steph's like, that was Monday. This is Thursday, idiot. And Blackman's like,
We don't attack Angle's opponents on a Thursday.
So we're still getting the Steph Kurt Angle thing, which again, I had no idea started as early as late 99.
Yeah, it started almost immediately, didn't it?
This is a long build up. We'll see. Backstage, Al Snow is pissed. He beat The Rock in a Brahma bull rope match on Raw, so he should be number one contender. Instead, he's wrestling The Rock tonight in a steel cage match. Stephanie is like, shut up, you idiot. And Al Snow's like, oh yeah, fine.
So basically, Al Snow this week asks, where's my title shot?
Oh, yes, Tom.
In the absence of the Hall of Fame bound.
It's not been announced yet.
Possibly Hall of Fame bound.
There we go.
British Bulldog. What are we going to do, mate, if
Bulldog never comes back?
If Bulldog goes into the Hall of Fame.
Do a merry jig.
I feel
we should
like
show up to the Coolaholic Wrestling podcast. Not the Coolaholic SmackDown.
In crap jeans covered in sweat.
You can be that one. You can be the good Bulldog. I will show up.
I like how that's the good Bulldog.
I'll show up with my hair like Bo Derek and have the tassels. I'll put on 3 times my body weight.
And just every time I push you over, just land on your side.
Yeah. If they want me in the Hall of Fame tonight, I'm going to be there whether I want to or not. Because I'm bizarre and I want to be in the Hall of Fame again tonight. Rotten. Love him. Greatest English athlete, British athlete, so good. Rotten on the mic.
Where's that? Where's my Hall of Fame induction? You call that a Hall of Fame induction? Oh, mate, I'm nervous if he goes in.
Only one. Who's going to induct Bulldog? I'll induct me into the Hall of Fame.
I think me and you should induct him into the Hall of Fame.
From Manchester, Stafford-upon-Avon, Milton Keynes, from half of the UK.
From wherever he chooses to sound like today. Yeah. Hi, we're Tom and Matthew from Cultaholic. We have a very special relationship with the British Bulldog. We have a podcast where we basically slag off his final days in the company. And that is why we're here to induct our friend, David Boy Smith. We'd like to thank David Boy Smith Jr. for seeing us earlier today and not throttling us. It's much appreciated. And now, pull up your jeans and oil up your Pepper Army abs.
And fall sideways on a backdrop.
Your new 2020 Hall of Fame inductee, the British Bulldog.
And the Players 99 theme. Woof, woof.
Amazing.
Bulldog.
Congratulations, David Boy Smith. We may continue to
Wait, you're the English inductee. Joey M. Randy.
Where's the posse? Get the posse in there.
We had a lovely time with Bulldog, carrying him every night. What? We were carrying him, weren't the match? No, I mean, we literally carried him every night.
Or I'll tell you who should induct him, a Stephanie McMahon with amnesia. Like, Steph comes out in her old style, long, uncurly hair, orthopedic shoes. I'd like to say I remember Bulldog, but I don't. Not since I got hit with that bin.
Even when he's not here. Anyway.
Fine. All right.
Anyway, the replay from Raw makes it clear that Al Snow needed help from all of DX, chairs, the bull rope, the Denver Broncos, everybody to beat The Rock. So he beat him, but didn't really beat him. And again, The Rock special match, the Brahma bull rope. There are only two of these to ever happen. And this is the second one.
I was going to ask how many times we saw a Brahma bull rope match.
Yeah, they had the False Count Anywhere strap match fully loaded, but that was just a strap match.
That was a fully loaded strap match.
That's right. I see you know your straps very well.
I do know my straps very well.
I'm coming in the history of the strappage.
Right
after further mockings of British Bulldog.
You'd have to really be careful with labelling that because you could attract a very different audience.
Hey, as long as they've got money. And tonight sees another debut of Al Snow's evil theme.
I love Al Snow's evil theme.
Underrated theme.
Isn't it brilliant? Oh, Al Snow's evil theme is amazing.
Yeah, it's a good one. And it makes sense he's got the evil hair dye. Or maybe that is his natural hair colour. I don't actually know at this point. No, wait, yeah, he's got black moustache. Goatee.
He has black moustache.
Yeah.
Black hair. Still wearing the Job Squad T-shirt, which I think needs to change.
Yeah, that's the one thing. They've revamped him, done his hair, new theme, not getting people to go, yay, remember Walmart? But they still have the Job Squad thing. And for people taking note of continuity, yes, Job Squad would be a thing, technically, because Goldberg still has the light heavyweight title.
So the final two members of the Job Squad are Al Snow and Goldberg.
I guess it's a stable if there's two people.
Is the Blue Meanie still in the Job Squad?
He didn't wear the gear last time we saw him on TV.
Right, so therefore he's done.
Yeah.
I think that means he's done.
Yeah, last time we saw him, and it was November. And
where are your friends?
And he had a Royal Rumble 99 shirt on.
Oh, my God. I was thinking of the Survivor Series when he got thrown around.
He may have had the Job Squad gear.
Ask Brian.
I really want to go back and check.
Math, ask Brian. Ask Brian if at this point he was still in a Job Squad.
I think at this point they were like, what? The Blue Meanie's still here.
Drop him a message. Ask Brian. Ask Brian.
But before we move on to the important stuff of messaging the Blue Meanie on his personal Facebook,
very
The
important.
Rock. Taking on Al Snow in cage, and Rock takes the time to annihilate Snow before they enter, with Rock taking just enough when they get inside, just, you know, get away with it. And weird bit where Al Snow nearly escapes the cage, but Rock gets a near fall, but they have to wait for the referee to run in to count.
Yeah, that was a bit odd.
Al Snow gets the chair, because that's the only way for Rock to sell for Al. And then, again, the referee has to run in to count. Rock kicks out. Still weird.
Can they not have, like, a referee from the gods like they do in the wrestling games, where you just have the voice go, 1, 2,
little animated guy. Three.
Yeah. 1, 2.
Little Nage Doc gif shows up.
Amazing.
Al Snow is teetering over the top of the cage, and Rock just about manages to grab his hair and takes him in. Crowd goes banana for that, because Al Snow is practically out the cage.
Is the secret to this spot in a cage match where the wrestler has grabbed you by the hair? Now, it's slightly masochistic, but is the secret just to let go of the cage? So therefore, the wrestler has to all of a sudden hold your entire body weight via your hair. And one of two things will happen. Either the wrestler will be unable to hold your body weight by the hair, so will let go, or they will pull out hair from your scalp, resulting in you falling to the ground anyway.
Either way, somebody's going to get their wig split.
Somebody is literally getting their wig split. That's surely the solution.
You're right.
I mean, it would be very masochistic.
That brings us to the Orndorff Hogan cage match that did have one of the best of all time Ventura quotes. I forget the actual spot, but I believe it's the one we've just seen. And Ventura just yells, "If Orndorff was bald, he'd be WWF champion by now."
Amazing.
It's a good point. Where are we? Nice one, Rock. Rock gets a super back suplex off the top rope, and Snow gets crunched on it. All
really,
like a cheap
really
luggage.
Did.
Snow tries to do air Snow, I guess, with the chair, but Rock clotheslines him in midair. Rock is somehow able to shrug off a low blow from Al, because he was like, "Oh, it's on you, Snow." Just gives him the Rock bottom and people's elbow and wins.
There you go.
Even with the referee being weird. So, yeah, made it clear. Yeah, Al, you're like aligned kind of with the DX. You're a tool. You can't beat the Rock unless they're there to interfere. So it's nice. It's everyone. We talk about trading wins on Raw and SmackDown and people get annoyed by them. I mean, just this week, Aleister Black took on Eric Rowan.
Yes.
And after already beating him. So people are like, repeat. But at least with this, the cage of stipulations, it's like, yeah, but if this had been a fair one-on-one contest, Rock would have beaten Al and so-and-so.
Yeah, they actually add a little bit of... The stipulation enhances the feud as opposed to a feud that enhances a stipulation. This is the time that we live in at the moment where with themed pay-per-views, how like it won't be so much about, oh, this rivalry needs a Hell in a Cell. It just happens they're having a feud in October and that's round the corner. Like, I miss those days where a grudge match would begat a themed match, as opposed to going, if I kick off me and you started a rivalry now, if we were wrestlers in WWE, we started a rivalry now, chances are we'd be with four other schlebs in an elimination chamber in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't be the match that we need. True story.
Right. Deep.
Deep, brother.
Backstage, the women are mad that they have to compete in the pudding bowl matches and the dressing gown matches that we're very fond of on this show and stuff.
And you know what? Good. They should be mad.
This is an interesting segment coming up because Ivory's like, "We need to do something serious to save the women's division." It's like, okay. "Don't worry, girls. In 20 years' time, the Bellas will save you," according to WWE history. So Ivory goes to the ring and she is mad that Miss Kitty removed her bra at Armageddon and mad that all she is doing is wiping her smut all over the women's title. Ivory demands she comes in and actually wrestles. This heel, evil woman certainly makes a lot of convincing points.
This is what's funny about this, is that it's the evil females in the locker room who demand wrestling matches as opposed to bra and panties matches. What a badly dated time we live in.
Yeah. So the cat comes out in a Santa outfit. And she says, "All right, I'll take you on as long as it's no DQ, no count out." Ivory's like, "Sure." And China enters. So we get the bizarre sight of a woman wrestling a woman on SmackDown. Jesus Christ. And obviously it's a fair contest, though, because Ivory's very athletic. She's a graduate of GLOW, obviously been wrestling for years, and former women's champion, and hasn't had a load of plastic surgery to help her. Oh, I'm just kidding. Trying to absolutely annihilate her with the pedigree, and Kitty sex pins with, I believe, is a finish sitting on the face.
The sex pin for the 1-2-3. I feel like this would be great if it was role reversed and if Kitty was a heel, if the cat was a heel. This would be a brilliant bit of storyline telling.
No, yes, on one hand, for this current period of history we live in. For 99, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
The woman wrestlers are here to look nice. You know, the cat has it. I don't know if Kat was even trained. She certainly didn't wrestle like she was.
I would imagine she would have had some basic training. Very basic training.
Yeah, you know, she had a lot of action underneath Jerry Lawler. And we all know. And don't boo me just because I'm right. But at this period, this is what, and this is one of the things where people will say about, oh, it's not good for the time period. And Bruce Pritchard's like, yeah, but this is what we're getting ratings and selling. So yeah. It's, like I said, it's 99, folks. Another debut on SmackDown. Your posse are talking to Kai and Tai backstage.
Oh, wow. So,
oh, but speaking of a thing of its time.
Speaking of aging, well, this ages as well as a burrito and a skip. My God, this is...
I was going to say it's aging about as well as, well, Taka Michinoku himself. But yeah, that's nice as well. Lots of you people say R instead of L. And Chinese, Japanese, what's the difference? Because it's the dark ages of... 99.
The posse calls them Chinese, yeah. And they correct them and say actually they're Japanese, and it's just like,
whatever.
Oh, and they tell them to relax, and they tell them to get their chopsticks and their rice and really. It's nothing. It's not a time.
It's 1999. It was a different period of life.
It's
like when the blackface bit with Nation, it's like, oh, come on, Gims was like, it was 98. You're like, what?
It was 1998. It's a different time. It's nearly the turn of the century. Jeez.
Oh, come on.
So what we're learning from this segment, once you sift through the xenophobia...
there's nothing else after that.
The basic thing is the Mean Street Posse are now... managing Kai and Tai?
They're giving them some advice. Because right. I think the joke is, though, it's like the Mean Street Posse are giving some guys some help.
Giving a former WWF light heavyweight champion advice.
Yeah, he needs all the help he can get.
Where is Bulldog? That is my concern.
What have you gotten to that? Oh, because Mean Street Posse, right.
Because the Posse are there. Well, and there is no sign of Bulldog.
They're gold diggers. Bulldog hasn't got the title.
Oh, interesting wrinkle.
I just made that up, by the way.
Oh, I thought you were adding an interesting wrinkle.
Well, no, wait, if I get this right, they were aligned with, but no, wait, I had nothing to do with Shane McMahon. I'm talking crap.
They were abandoned by Shane McMahon.
So went to Bulldog.
So they went to Bulldog, and then the Bulldog is nowhere to be found this week. Where's Bulldog? Not even Meltzer knows.
These minions are looking for a leader.
I am upset that Meltzer has disappeared.
Meltzer has disappeared. And Corbin's happy.
But no, I mean Bulldog's disappeared, Meltzer.
I had to jump on that, I'm sorry. Christian and Jeff Hardy, hodgepodge team, because see Edge wrestled Angle and Matt is in the hospital. He's currently on V1. Getting an update. Versus Kai and Tai. And this match is brought to you by 1-800-COLLECT, Slam Cam, and Tomb Raider, The Last Revelation.
Yay! Tomb Raider. This is the game. So this is many, many years after the first one.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we've advanced from locking the butler in the kitchen.
That's like WrestleMania X7 of Tomb Raider stuff. Because what happens to the other games? I've no clue. She raids some tombs. That's it.
The woman who voices Lara Croft in the games follows me on Twitter.
Nice. What, the new games? Or
no, the,
been a few ones?
The original, oh, original, nice. The original Tomb Raider games.
What did she say, Edge? There's one where she goes...
Now I need to change out of these wet clothes. Is it really sad that that's one of the lines that immediately jumps to my mind?
Thank God you've shown up. My fridge isn't working.
Shelley Blonde.
Oh, nice.
the original voice of Lara Croft.
You think you've seen enough? Shoot a camera. Remember that bit.
That's it.
Don't let us distract you from the SmackDown debut of Kai and Tai. Only one word now, but that would change. Not sure why Kai and Tai would go to three words, but whatever. We'll find out. They've been around on this year on Sunday Night Heat, jobbing on Raw a few times, and Superstaros. Super Astros. Why have I put Staros?
Superstaros.
Like superstars, but with an O on the end.
That is what a tourist would call Super Astros. Right? Superstaros. Can I have that with bacon O, sausage O's, chippos, please? Garcon. Tourism. But
Ikedagamas.
This is the second incarnation of Kai and Tai in the WWF.
Of course it is.
From 1998, we used to have Shofunaki, Dick Togo, Men's Teo, and...
Oh, I can't believe I forgot Shofunaki, his name as well.
Men's Teo.
Choppy. Wally Yamaguchi.
Oh, Wally Yamaguchi. No, but I thought there was... Oh, no, then Taka Michinoku made it four. There was three before, and then Taka added to make it four. That was it. Because Taka wasn't originally a member. Mm-hmm. They tried to recruit Taka, and he was like, nah, man, I'm not having it. You're all baddies. But then eventually he went, yeah, all right, I'll join you.
Yeah, he teamed up with Al Venus.
Yeah.
Turned on him.
And he teamed with Bradshaw randomly for one show.
Remember? Had those bits where Bradshaw was teaching Taka Michinoku how to be American. And he was like smoking cigars. And he's like, oh, and he was like, me never drink before. It's like, me Tonto from Lone Ranger.
Jeez.
Meanwhile, Japan, he's like, top of Michinoku Pro, Kai and Tai Deluxe or DX, I believe it was. Some of these crazy six-man tags.
Kai and Tai DX.
Was voted match of the year. Amongst many people, barely legal, 97. ECW.
They're phenomenal.
Goes to WWF and like, oh, hello.
Have some rice and relax.
What car?
Jeez. Wrestling's terrible.
99.
Wrestling's terrible.
Taka immediately impresses his ability to land on his feet and not get himself injured. Also, his Asai moonsault to the outside. In fact, I hope this is true. I got told this years ago, and still is. They wear blue and white because they, at that period in ECW, where they were inducted as the Japanese branch of the Blue World Order.
Yes, BWO Japan.
Yeah.
So that's
No. Wait, Kodo Fuyuki. It's not going to be a thing. Oh, okay, right. Thanks.
So it's a bleed over from that then?
Allegedly, yes.
Oh.
Please be right. But anyway, yeah, Taka looks good here.
They all look great.
Also, Funaki's there. Yeah, and then Jeff and Christian both dive the outside on separate occasions. But they stop working together well. And it's like, hey, I want to go with the move. Oh, hey, ooh, not on the same page. So Kai and Tai able to get the camel clutch drop kick combo that they're known for.
I love that.
Both teams slicker than cum on a gold tooth. I'm very fond of that line. I do apologize.
Did you say that? Is that from experience?
But sadly, one team has
to lose. We didn't know the Desert Island Graps with you, mate.
But sadly, one team has to lose.
Yes.
And it's Kai and Tai because they got advice from the Mean Street Posse. Kai and Tai unhappy after the loss. And drop kick all three members of the Mean Street Posse and then run away.
When they drop kick them, they don't even knock them off their feet. They drop kick
Japanese them. People small.
They drop kick them and leg it and then the posse immediately recover. It was not effective at all and chase after them.
It's like a metaphor for the second. Jim Ross wishes Mick Foley good luck. Yeah, cheers, Jim. That'll help. Anyway, the cops are...
What was the point in that segment? Is it because we're still selling the idea that Jim Ross doesn't trust the McMahon-Helmsley era? Because nobody should. This is all so much bollocks. Like, JR's backstage going, hey, I don't trust him. It's like, well, no, because this
out,
is...
Mick.
Watch out, Mick. Thanks for the advice, Jim.
Oh, cheers, Jim.
See you Monday. Like,
what, are you telling me I can't trust the McMahon-Helmsley era? What do you base this groundless accusation on, Jim Ross? All right, thanks. Meanwhile, the cops are keeping DX away. Billy Gunn is confident with his match against Kane next. And the rest of DX is like, all right, yeah, you go get him. As soon as he leaves for the match, Road Dogg turns around and gives a quick prayer.
Oh.
It's a nice little bit.
I like that because like all the DX members are very much on the back foot tonight because they can't cheat and perform shenanigans and stuff.
And Kane versus Gunn. Gunn gets killed. Pinned. That's it. And then Kane chases Gunn to the back.
Nearly tombstones him on the outside.
Right, with Triple H unable to escape due to, you know, the police, but Road Dogg is able to help his friend. So Kane gets Gog. Kane gets Dog. That's not an easy sentence.
Kane gets Dog.
Shut up, Tom.
Dog runs fast.
Run, dog, run. Christ. Road Dogg tells Kane where Tori is. She's in Xbox.
At my fall!
This could be a good podcast, this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On Raw, Mae Young and Fabulous Moolah wrestled the Dudley Boys because of reasons.
It was a triple threat tag match because of reasons. Because it was the Acolytes versus the Dudleys versus Moolah and Mae Young.
Well, anyway, all the clips are shown of Dudley Boys pounding away on Young and Moolah. And anyway, Mark Henry rushes to the save. And Lawler's on fire here, like he will be when he goes to hell. He says, in Moolah's yearbook, Mary and Joseph are voted cutest couple. Here we are. Henry has a poem for his lovely woman.
Can we agree this poem was sweet but crap?
I just typed in, I'm not going to read it, and moved on. There we go. It's not as good as previous poems.
Oh, God. Bossman is the poet laureate of the WWF at this point. It goes without saying.
Oh, it's good you say that, because it's only this weekend. I was doing quizzes and stuff with some family members, and I honestly thought poet laureate was a poet named laureate. I didn't realize it was an accolade. Why hasn't someone heard of the poet laureate?
That would be
Damien Sandow should have had that finisher.
I would assign it to British independent star Gene Money, but he already has the Ainsley laureate, so I wouldn't want to change history too much like that.
Right, but speaking of history, the Dudleys have the missile drop in their intro now.
Yes, they do.
It's good, and I like it. But it's nowhere near as good as get up, get up, get up.
Or, as they will have in TNA, put down, put down, put down. How can we make this completely copyright free? Well, the first says get up. So what if this one says put down? I'm sure it says put down in their TNA
put
music.
Put down, put down, put, put down, down,
put down, put down.
Lift up the shell bomb. Anyway.
This is somewhat in control. Who sang Drop the Bombshell?
Power Man 5000.
Thank you very much.
Oh, there
much.
We go. So... power electricity woman 3000. Oh, this is stupid. Back to the important match of Mark Henry versus Bubba Ray Dudley. Mark Henry gets called a big dumb Olympic failure by the southern redneck from New York, Bubba Ray Dudley. And the crowd actually like it when he says, Mae Young, you are old and wrinkly and smell like a bedpan. So Bubba has to insult Texas of all the stuff you can imagine.
But I love it.
Inbred, truck driving.
With that southern drawl.
And you know what else? Your football team sucks. It's a direct quote. That's how lazy he is insulted, which is even better than being personally insulted. It's
I love it.
Whatever, football sucks.
Your football team isn't very good.
Oh, I'll kill you. Bubba drops poor Mark on his head to start off with. A good night for landing on your friggin' heed.
Jeez.
In this show. Lawler calls Mae Young, quote, a two-bagger. Do you know what that means, Tom? Because I do.
Come on then, mate.
You put a bag over her head and a bag over your head just in case hers falls off.
There you go.
It's one of my favourites, that.
Jerry Lawler, you are as old as the hills, even in 1999.
Stuff happens, and Devon's was-up headbutt is halted by the Golden Girls at ringside, and Mark is able to finish with the world's sexiest splash. And Michael Cole says, wow, as Mark Henry and Mae Young leave together, love does weird things to people. And Lawler adds, yeah, so does time.
Oh, my Christ.
Good timing there, Lawler, no pun intended. Cops lead Triple H to the cage. Wow, they're strong. They must be wearing lugs. Boot of the week. And it's DX dressed as Santa Claus's. Two Santa Claus's.
Is this the Boiler Room Santa Brawl Claus's match? Santa yeah. Claus. Santa Claus Eye.
Santa Claus Eye.
Santa Clai. Santa Clai is plural for Santa Claus. Santa Clai. Santa Clax. A gathering, an apology of Santa Clax.
A murder of Santa.
A murder of Santa Clax.
Beat up Mankind on Raw. That explanation was brought to you by Lugs. It's for your feet.
For your feet and your Santa clacks.
Make sure you ask for Santa.
Specifically when you order Lugs.
Yes. Doesn't matter if it's Santa A, Santa B. Anyway. Triple H is put in the cage in the ring. Jerry Lawler, another quote. Why do women always get their way?
Is this before or after a recent law settlement? Sounds like something he would say after.
Our lawyer said to move on, so
I've got
in my ear. What's that? All right, fine. Oh, and here come the five selected dudes to surround the ring. And they are the undercard, but the goodies.
It's the goody-goody, yum-yum. The selected guys are just the good-uns.
The good-uns. They call themselves the good-uns.
So do you reckon they must have just put like a forklift truck in front of the bad guy locker room? I want there to be a bad guy locker room and a good guy locker room.
Oh, we'll see, won't we? The Big Show versus Mick Foley for the title. Mick sells
how
a bunch.
How they determine the undercard goodies that come out? Like, as they get towards the stage, is it like, you must be between this over and this over to ride the main event? So, like, someone like, for example, who would have been on the periphery? The Stevie Richards isn't quite tall enough, but The Rock is too tall. So yeah. You need to be between the middle. That's why we've got, like, Edge and Christian and Jeff Hardy.
I like your theory, but Test is there.
No, Test is well.
Tonight he is.
Tonight
he's
fine.
He's just...
His performance tonight doesn't undo weeks and weeks of being an absolute arse.
Him stood on his tiptoes means he is legally tall enough.
He's just over enough to be in this match.
Don't worry, we'll sure find some way of digging him a bit deeper.
Of course we will.
Big Show comes out and it's, all right, it is his entrance is over.
Like, is that how his song starts?
It's like,
all right.
I guess it's the Big Show.
There is something to be said in terms of ambivalence for a champion when their theme music starts with, well, we should have known at that point when their music starts with, well, it's the Big Show.
We're sorry, it's the Big Show.
It's the Big Show.
His dad is dead. His dad is dead. Yes, that's right. His dad is dead tonight and every
most
night.
Other nights.
Oh, yeah. Mick sells a bunch. And sadly, at this point, with no gimmicks to distract, he's looking haggard. He uses the Roddy Piper 1994 offense to stick it to Show.
Big shout for the steel chair shots. Big Show absorbed in this.
Yeah, really, once Big Show realizes, oh, hang on, the guy's supposed to be leading me, I'm supposed to be leading, we got the bit where it goes outside, some chairs are used, because apparently the shark cage match, that's, yeah, whatever.
It's no DQ.
Yeah, instead of a man doing commentary at ringside. And Mankind, realizing that he's just not tall enough to ride the Big Show ride, as we've previously established, mm-hmm. stands on the announce table and splashes a chair. Right, look, chair juice all over the Big Show.
Oy vey. This was minging.
Yeah.
Horrible and chair shot.
Probably the highlight of the match, though, because after that, Big Show goes for a bear hug. How dare you, you alleged face. You alleged champion of faces. And oof, Foley tries a sleeper hold, but it's the Jeff Jarrett one where he's like on the back,
like
Yoda doing training with Luke Skywalker. And Big Show falls backwards. Like the Vader spot in WCW, where Foley was intentionally trying to get injured.
Is that true?
He did. Rob Alley confessed that in his autobiography, that they're going to do that on the ramp, I believe. Or, oh no, in WCW at that time, we were on the big ramp.
And he was legit trying to get injured.
He was like, I don't want to get hurt. But apparently he hurt a bit and then got up and was like, oh, my body's that used to it. He was like able to carry on as if nothing happened. He went, oh no.
Christ.
Yeah.
That's a sad state of affairs when you're desperate to get injured.
Yeah. Lucky he'd be all right in the end.
It'll all work out fine. He'll only hobble a bit now.
Having a crap match with Big Show years later. Socko comes out and he goes towards Show, but the momentum causes him and Mick to fall outside. And while this happens, execute order 66. All the baddies attack the five dudes. And while that's happening, Triple H's cage is lowered somehow.
Now, what I noticed was that the shark cage holding Triple H above the ring came down just before the baddies ran out, the baddie mid-card, which leads me to think that the cage above the ring and the drawbridge for the baddie locker room is on some sort of pivot system.
Oh.
So, like, it's on one shared bit of rope. So as the cage comes down, the drawbridge goes up.
Right.
So that opens the floodgates and the baddies can then come out.
Right. You couldn't see them, but the headbangers were standing on a dead man's switch, I believe is the term.
I'm happy to draw a diagram on Twitter to show you what I mean by this.
You could, but you're busy, Tom. If only you had someone.
If only there was somebody who could recreate what I was trying to explain in Photoshop form. The only trombone I've got. John! John! Inbox me, I'll tell you what I need.
John, assemble! So what's happening? Stephanie McMahon.
I ask myself that a lot.
What's happening? Stephanie gets in the ring and appears to be trying to prevent Triple H from escaping the cage.
Mm.
But still, despite Big Steph's best attempts,
Big Steph,
Triple H manages to escape the shark cage. Stephanie is then used as a human shield, and Mankind doesn't know what to do. But Stephanie decides for him by kicking Mankind right in the dick. Then all of DX show up to destroy Mankind. That sounds really cool, that one. All of Mankind is destroyed, once again, thanks to DX. Michael Cole eventually gets it when Triple H and Stephanie start making out. We've been had.
It was a setup all along.
Quick, do the trombone. Dick. Dickhead.
Hang on, I'm going to go over here.
Tom's actually doing a victory lap.
I'm going to go over here for added effect. It was a setup all along!
Oh, good, I got to press a button.
Who'd have thunk it? They had us. Christ. I don't think we can... Round of applause for the geniuses. We had no idea they were playing us the whole time. This is right.
They played us like a damn fiddle.
They played us like a shitty fiddle. This is the thing, right?
Why have you sworn?
This is the thing, right? This is Triple H's worst trope. His worst. And he's got some bad uns. This is his worst. But the problem is, every single goddamn time he busts, and it's him, primarily him, he busts out the, oh, there's dissension. What's going to happen? Not really, lol. So angry, I've lost my voice. Every single time they bust it out, you can, even somebody in a different postcode can see the writing on the wall. That's how bad it is.
I've just found Triple H's booking sheet.
Triple H, yes. Matthew is now showing me the Homer Simpson meme of Homer having a cigar, lying on the sofa saying, everyone is stupid except me. That is accurate.
Let's hear it from the man himself.
Boy, everyone is stupid except me.
Thanks, Homer.
That is basically...
I get sued for that.
That is basically Triple H several times a year when he's the leader of a faction. And he's done it in DX. He has done it as part of the McMahon-Helmsley era. He's done it as part of the corporation. He has done it as part of Evolution. Every faction he has been in, he has busted out this... Oh no, this whole, for the whole show, we have fallen out. This is the end of our gang. Not really. Every time.
Daniel Bryan, I'm telling you, I'm not going to screw you. I want you to do best for WWE. SummerSlam.
It's his worst trope. And I just find it funny that the feeling is, and even bless the commentators, Michael Cole having to go, he had us all along. No, he didn't. At no point.
Guys.
Even part of the script was for the wrestlers to go, we're not buying this.
Come on.
Daft.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm liking the fact that they have to mix it up on occasion and do stuff like this because they can't just be McMahon-Helmsley era. Running wild, like an Australian bushfire, all over the roster every single week. So, mixing it up, I'm all right with it. I think you're being negative. But before you start analysing things, the show goes off the air with the McMahon-Helmsley era embracing and say, hey, everyone, we've got two words for you, Dallas. Suck it!
He goes, no.
Merry Christmas.
Ah.
God bless us.
Everyone.
And R.I.P. Tory. So
Triple H would have been visited by all three ghosts and at the end still been a dick to Tiny Tim. Just putting that out there.
Stop talking about test. So what was something you remembered from Tiny Tim's got a broken nose and he can't work.
What did I remember from this Raw? Yeah. I remembered the Rock Al Snow cage match.
Do you?
Yeah. I remember feeling, because I was an Al Snow fan in 99. I loved Al Snow. And I was genuinely quite excited to see the rise of Al Snow. I haven't talked about this side of me much during the podcast because there's been so much other stuff going on. But I was quite enjoying the rise of Al Snow as a heel. And I genuinely thought this was cementing him at the top. Mm. It was, at very best, it was sticky back plasticking him to the top as opposed to cementing him anywhere. But I liked seeing him mix it up with The Rock in a cage. That was good fun. What did you remember?
I also remember that, so I'll have to think of something else. What else happened?
Did you remember that?
Christ, come on, Matthew.
Did you remember that? It was a setup all along.
No. Okay. No, I probably fell for it like an idiot. Remember that sound effect? What do I remember? There's something. Oh.
We're not going home until you've remembered a thing. It's like a Peter Kay writing session.
Oh, wow. All right, nice. I remember Tess getting that little push. I remember Tess there because it looked briefly like Tess was going to be the Tess that we all want him to be.
Mm.
Finally, he's not going to take it. Not going to take it anymore. No.
He looked like he was going to get somewhere.
Yeah. So maybe it's this week or maybe it's next week. We'll see which one I actually properly remembered.
Okay.
Because, I'm actually eagerly anticipating seeing if Tess... It's going to continue to be test.
Me too, actually. Testy. Me too, because there could be some damage control about to happen with test.
Emotionally, what's the thing? Emotionally charged.
Or emotionally bankrupt. We'll find out.
Yes.
What did you forget?
The women's division trying to go, can we wrestle?
Oh.
And the other one's going, no.
Which
apparently was the real life reason why Luna Vachon left later on in 2000.
Because he wanted to wrestle.
Yeah.
Imagine this happening during the when Steph comes out and goes, we're having a Divas Evolution. And then suddenly out comes, like, from the mothballs, Deborah and Kelly, who insist on a bra and panties match there and then, and Paige and Charlotte and Sasha Banks will run away. Like, it'd be frowned upon. It'd be shamed. This was such a weird time. I'd forgotten about that, but I'd also forgotten about the casual xenophobia towards Kai and Tai from the Mean Street Posse.
Yeah.
And just generally how ill-treated they were in this bit. We laugh about it, but it's crap because, like, they, like, Taka Michinoku, obviously star of Michinoku Pro, Kai and Tai, major faction around wrestling, not in America mainly, but in other places. Lots to offer. Treated such as sort of secondhand nonsense when in this particular year, but then it wouldn't change for ages. You think when Yoshihiro Tajiri debuted in 2001 as like bumbling servant to William Regal. Could you imagine? Imagine Shinsuke Nakamura debuting like that.
Yeah, even in 2001, the idea of, hey, you know the Green Hornet from 50 years ago?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, thanks to you, and you can get it. And as early as so 2-3 years ago, when Jinder Mahal did the thing with Fumo Nakamura, and he went, oh, Nakamura, you just need to relax.
Oh,
he did it. I remember we were going, wow, really? Like, oh.
We never learned. But I'd forgotten about that bit. I'd forgotten about the...
And to add to this, because, by the way, yeah, just please, if you've listened this far, I'm making fun of the fact that they've been... xenophobic as hell. Sometimes I think we cross the lines here between making fun of the thing.
Oh, no.
And people, sometimes get confused.
We
absolutely, in no way, shape, or form, going to make fun of
the We 100% do not endorse this behavior. We are literally, we are watching back wrestling from a time. We do not endorse it at
please,
all.
Please.
Like I said, this, as I said earlier, this ages as well as a burrito in a skip.
Yes.
It doesn't. It's bad. And we're just reporting what is happening. And
it's not my fault they said it.
Another thing that I forgot. Which we'll end it on a brighter note.
Yeah, there we go. Please save us.
Another thing that I forgot was how good Jeff Hardy and Christian were as a tag team.
Mm.
To the point where I remember watching this and seeing Jeff Hardy and Christian wrestle as a tag team and thinking, oh, they'd be a great tag team anyway. And I used to write down like what I would do in wrestling. I used to have notebooks of like fantasy book wrestling shows and stuff. And I seem to remember having a thing where I made Jeff Hardy and might have even done it on one of the wrestling games. I had Jeff Hardy and Christian as a tag team and they feuded with Matt Hardy and Edge. So this inspired that in me.
I thought it was going to go a completely different, darker place there.
Oh, really?
I had little drawings of Jeff Hardy and Christian together.
No, that's
frolicking and...
Very little slash in my life at the age
living
of
in the sunlight,
the age
living
of 16.
In the moonlight, just having a wonderful time together.
I'm sure if you looked up online, you would find many things that would encompass that sort of peccadillo, should that be something you want to peccadillo.
It's crazy, the amount of people that don't seem to realise that the Young Bucks are related. So, I mean, it was a good episode of SmackDown. Good episode of SmackDown.
Was
I had fun watching it.
It was good fun. And if you'd like to watch along with us, we'll do it all again next week. Until then, he is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. What you got coming up this week, Math?
New Botchamania that I'm up against the time because I need to get out before friggin' Saudi Arabia showdown,
which is basically what it is.
Look, I've got one bit of my brain on this podcast that will come at the end of, and one bit on when we're going to eat next. Yeah.
Yeah.
Saudi, the thing that you're going to pretend to boycott, but you're not really. Yeah, that thing's going to happen, and then... more of the usual good stuff with Cullaholic.
There you go.
And what have you got for us, Tom?
I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Desert Island Graps with Adam Pacitti. If you've not watched it yet,
nice.
It's on the YouTube channel right now. The podcast version goes online tomorrow. So it's wonderful. It was nice to make Adam Pacitti cry.
Oh, lots of people are very envious of you having that.
I feel like we've reached new ground at Cultaholic. And it's worth your time. It was a lovely chat with Lord Pacitti. You can watch it on the YouTube channel right now. Until then, we are together at Cultaholic. We will see you next time. It was a setup all along.
Do the outro with the thing. Go on.
Love you, bye.
Stupid kick.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.